Cynthia and Malcolm knew June of 2015 would be a trying time. Their sister Jackie had recently been diagnosed with cancer.
We thought it was stage 3 or 4 cancer. And so immediately Cynthia got into research mode in terms of, you know, researching what we needed to do, identifying a good doctor for Jackie, trying to put together a plan of action where we can help her from afar.
Cynthia asked if Jackie wanted her sister by her side when she saw the doctor. She said yes.
And she said, well, go ahead and find me a safe hotel to stay at, which I did.
Jackie would send her the address later.
The last thing she texted me was, okay, we got time. That was on June 16th. And she got killed June 17th. So that was the last text message, which I still have on my phone, that we had between each other.
June 17th was a Wednesday. That night, as she always did, Cynthia Hurd went to Bible study. Among the familiar faces of the congregation, people she knew well, was a stranger. When he came to the fellowship hall at Emmanuel AME Church, he was greeted with kindness. He sat, he listened, and he waited. When the parishioners all closed their eyes in prayer, he pulled out a gun and opened fire. 9, including Cynthia Hurd, were murdered that night. We know now Dylan Roof will die for his crime. A jury unanimously sentenced him to death after just 3 hours of deliberations. But while Dylan Roof started this story, his sentence or even his death will not end it. For the next hour, we will hear from those still coming to terms with their loss and from others trying to make sense of the senseless. This is Eyes Closed in Prayer. I meet Malcolm Graham and Jackie Jones as they leave the federal courthouse in Charleston.
Yes, I'm Gwendolyn. Hi, how are you?
This is my sister Jackie.
How you doing?
Hi, Jackie, how are you?
I'm fine,
nice to meet you.
Same here.
But their posture is drawn after listening to the first day of testimony. One of the survivors of the attack, a woman named Felicia Sanders, broke into tears on the stand. She described clutching her 11-year-old granddaughter while watching Ruth shoot her son multiple times. One of Ruth's attorneys objected to the show of emotion. That was too much for Jackie.
She's explaining what happened that night. She's living that night all over again, and you're upset because she's crying on the stand? I mean, where's your compassion?
We walk down the street to a parking garage and get into Malcolm's car. Jackie looks out on the city where she grew up.
It's weird. It doesn't feel like home anymore because, you know, the heart of our family is no longer with us. So, you know, when I come home, I can't go to her house like I normally do because she's not there. So it feels kind of weird being home.
She's staying at a hotel within sight of the Emmanuel AME Church. They know it well.
My mom and grandmother attended here. As kids, Cynthia, Jackie, and I, we went to Sunday school, bottom in the basement there. Jackie got married at the church. Our parents are buried in the church graveyard. So Emmanuel has been a part of our family foundation for some 50 years. And so it was no surprise that Cynthia was at church, went to that Bible study. And here we stand in front of the church right now on a Wednesday night. And obviously Bible study probably is occurring as we speak. The bottom gate is where you go into the fellowship hall.
The same gate Dylan Roof walked through that June night.
Please answer.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
Please, Emmanuel Church is plenty of people shot down here. Please send somebody right away.
As Roof fled north, his face was everywhere. TV, newspapers, the internet. Some 14 hours later, a Shelby police officer called this in to dispatch.
I know it's strange, but I just got a call on my personal cell phone. A lady called a friend of mine and said that she was behind a car matching the description of the Charleston killer. It had a South Carolina tag on it, white male, early 20s, with a bowl haircut.
Roof was soon taken into custody without incident. 2 days after committing his crimes, Roof stood shackled before a closed circuit camera connected to a courtroom.
Today is June 19th, 2015, Charleston County Bond Court. I'm Judge James Gosnell, the Chief Magistrate of Charleston County.
The judge asked Roof some basic questions.
What is your age?
21.
You're 21 years old. Are you employed?
No, sir.
You're unemployed at this time?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Then the family members of those Roof killed were asked if they wanted to speak. Some did, and what they had to say left many speechless.
I just want everybody to know, to you, I forgive you. You took something very precious away from me. I will never talk to her ever again. I will never be able to hold her again. But I forgive you.
You know, I forgive you, my family forgive you. But we would like you to take this opportunity to repent. Repent. Confess. Give your life to the one who matters the most, Christ, so that he can change it, can change your ways no matter what happened to you, and you'll be okay.
A moment of grace in the midst of pain.
We welcome you Wednesday night in our Bible study with open arms. You have killed some of the most beautifulest people that I know. Every fiber in my body hurts, but as we say in Bible study, we enjoyed you, but may God have mercy on you.
But a sentiment not shared by all.
A representative of the family of Cynthia Hurd.
When it was Malcolm Graham's turn, his voice was hushed.
We have nothing to say.
We have nothing to say is all he could muster. Graham doesn't regret that.
Some people's faith walk is a lot stronger and different than mine. But 2 days after the murder, my sister still was in a morgue. And I was not at a forgiving place then, and I am not at a forgiving place now. And certainly forgiveness is a journey. One first must ask for forgiveness, and then admit guilt. And he hasn't done any of that. He hasn't asked for forgiveness. He has admitted guilt with conditions. So I can't forgive him on behalf of my sister, those she died with, and for a race of people that he insulted.
Malcolm drives me to where Cynthia lived. It's a two-story house on a quiet street, the same house they grew up in. Even then, he says, Cynthia stood out.
Yeah, because we would be playing on the street on Benson Street, touch football, dodgeball, something like that. And Cynthia would be on the porch reading. And this was pre-intranet, right? And so Cynthia probably read every edition of the World Book Encyclopedias from A to Z. She was in the books. She was into reading and scholarship. And so she was our internet, because
every book of the encyclopedia.
She knew it. And so when we needed something, research papers, when we were in high school, or we just go to Cynthia.
Some kids would tease her for being a bookworm, but that, he says, didn't bother her. Cynthia always had a way of seeing the best in people and seeing their potential even if they didn't see it in themselves.
I remember a conversation we were having, and she asked me what I wanted to do. And I guess I had to be in elementary school. Who's thinking about that, right? And I said, I want to be a truck driver. And she said, you can do a lot better than that. And, you know, growing up in Charleston in the late 70s, being a young guy that was, you know, pretty smart in school, that wasn't the way to gain friends, you know, because, you know, you want to fit in with everybody else. And she reminded me that being different, being smart, was not a bad thing, and that I need to kind of grow to my fullest potential.
Malcolm went on to become a successful businessman, Charlotte City Councilman, and state senator. Cynthia followed her love of books and became a librarian.
A typical day for her for 16 years was working at the Charleston County Library from 8 o'clock to about 5 o'clock. Then she would go to the College of Charleston Library, where she would work at night from 6 to about 10:30. And she did that for 16 years.
Every day.
Every day. Maybe a day or two off at the College of Charleston. And she didn't do it because she needed the money. She did it because she loved being in the environment of the library.
And she didn't just tend the stacks.
The kids knew her. The local vagrants knew her. They all knew not to come to this library and cause any trouble because Mrs. Hurd was in charge.
Oh, my. A vibrant mural of books now graces the library Cynthia Hurd cherished as a child and ran as an adult. It's dedicated in her memory. A second library now bears her name. But tributes to the life Cynthia Hurd lived go far beyond brushstrokes and buildings. Like most of us, Eric Davis learned of the killings on the news.
Like the first thing that morning when they first started naming the victims, and I was like, oh man, Cynthia Hurd. And I didn't realize it at first, and then when they put the picture up, I was like, I just saw her. And yeah, it hurt. It really did hurt.
The 22-year-old had known Cynthia Hurd for years.
She was actually my manager for my first job, my first summer job. I was working at the library, and I actually grew up going to the library, so I already knew her personally. And working for her was probably one of the best jobs that I ever had.
Davis would run errands, do odd jobs. On days when he didn't have money, Cynthia would buy him lunch. Even after Eric Davis took another job, Cynthia Hurd would check in on him.
I actually saw her 2 days before the shooting happened. So I was working at Walmart at the time, and she came in there, and we talked about for about 10 minutes about me getting ready to go back to college and everything.
But at the time, Eric was only attending occasional classes. He had no plans to return full time. That changed the day Eric Davis heard that Cynthia Hurd was gone.
Just knowing that she passed, like, I felt like that was more motivation. I don't want to let her down because she told me to make sure I finished school. And not finishing school, that would be a letdown. So I can't do that. That would eat me away for years and years, and I can't have that.
Davis re-enrolled in college, did well enough to earn a scholarship. He will graduate with a degree in graphic design. His life, just one piece of Cynthia Hurd's legacy. Brittle Bank Park is within walking distance from where Malcolm Graham and Cynthia Hurd grew up. First as children, then as adults, they would go to the park and talk. He can still feel his sister's presence.
I can see us on that bench right now talking, and her saying that her death really wasn't about her. She would say that her death and the death of the eight others was really about a race of people. About the Christian church and about people being in touch with their humanity. And that 250 years of suffering at the hands of some white folks who despise African Americans based on their skin color, that it simply can't be about just denying folks who died, that we need to broaden the conversation, that this is about how a race of people in 2015 are still being seen as someone being less significant, less important, and that their killing is accepted in some quarters.
Malcolm Graham's view on what happened that night is crystal clear.
What occurred that night was that nine people lost their lives simply because they were black. Five other were terrorized simply because they were there. And the community will never be the same because it happened.
Strangers are still welcome to attend Bible study at Mother Emanuel, but now they have to be buzzed in. And although its address has not changed, the section of Calhoun Street in front of the church has been renamed. John Calhoun was a proud supporter of slavery. That stretch is now known as Mother Emanuel Way Memorial District. On a recent December morning, two women, both professional gardeners, were hard at work outside one of the grand homes on Charleston's Battery Park.
And we're planting and covering flowers today for the freeze that's coming up tonight.
That's Jennifer Stringer Obie. The killings at Mother Emanuel have caused her to think long and hard about a difficult subject, race and racism.
It has. It definitely has. I feel like I'll never understand what it's like to be a minority. And I do have that privilege. So if I can help others understand that, you know, everybody needs to feel equal and just communicating and just being kind to others, because I just feel like we have to set that example.
Alongside her works McKenna Perry. And Perry says she has a gripe with the coverage of the Dylann Roof trial.
Even throughout the journalism, the newspapers, and the TV articles that I've seen, journalists still seem to be really shedding light on the fact that he's a young white male from elsewhere. And I wish that they would bring a little bit more humanity to the subject and maybe just realize that it's not just Dylann Roof and it's not just a white male, it's not just a black male. These are actual people with names and faces, and because we're still talking about white men and black men as opposed to people.
Up next, the trial of Dylann Roof and the story of another family torn apart, then rebuilt in a new home.
For me, I'm a work in progress, and I acknowledge that I am very angry, but we are the family that love built.
You're listening to Eyes Closed in Prayer.